Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you this Wednesday, May 28th. It is just great weather out there right now. One of my favorite times of the year, quite frankly, in Tucson, as we've talked about a lot on The Morning Voice over here. The restaurant season, the hospitality season in Tucson has officially come to an end with Memorial Day weekend, you know, passing us last week. You can suddenly get a walk into a restaurant and get a table without a reservation. Those movie theaters are half full. Even traffic seems a little lighter on the way down here, Matt Neely. It's seemed a little easier today.
The trade-off for the heat is you kind of have, you can get into any restaurant you want to go. Traffic's generally light. There is a trade-off for enduring a summer here.
Without a doubt.
And thunderstorms. That's also a nice bonus.
But we love it in the patio business, right? Union Hospitality Group, we've got a big old patio out there at River and Campbell, and it's actually quite nice to sit outside at 7, 8, 9 p.m. And so while this might not be the highest of high seasons in our industry, it's actually a great time for restaurants, particularly ones with nice patios, because even in our high season, in January, February, even early March, it can be quite cold at 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night, which is the prime dining hours.
I'm telling you, the evening hours right now, we got a little bit longer to go before the evenings get, when the humidity kicks in, it's kind of over then, but for now, for the next week or so, you know, maybe two, the evenings do cool off, and it is quite pleasant out there once the sun is not beating down on you. So if it's you get in those twilight hours, it starts getting real comfortable real quick.
Without a doubt, it's great out there right now. I love it. It finally gives us a little time to work on the business as opposed to, say, in the business.
Yeah.
We do, how some people talk about a spring cleaning, right? In the restaurant business, we have more of like a summer cleaning. Like, this is the time when you get to work on the establishment. And just yesterday, actually, we closed down Union Public House and redid all of our wood floors in there, ripped out every piece of furniture, sanded and scrubbed, and worked for 36 hours straight on a one-day closure, because what do you do with a place that's open 7 days a week until 2 o'clock in the morning? Like, when do you get this done? You know when? The day after Memorial Day. That is the absolute day to do this kind of job. And it's going to be one of the topics of our show today, because I'd like to talk about doing a little summer cleaning of Tucson over here, how we're going to fix up the city and unincorporated Pima County. In our first hour, we're going to talk about that and ways that we can clean up our own floors over here and clean up our own house over the summer, take advantage of some of the opportunities that we have to make next year, next season in Tucson, a great place. We've got a great show coming up for you today. Congressman Juan Ciscomani on the second hour today as well, too. So really excited to have him on here. But first, food for thought, the top four things you need to know in the city of Tucson. The CD7 congressional race is heating up. There was a big candidate debate last night on public TV, KUAT TV, right?
KUAT, yes.
The five Democrat candidates that duked it out for CD7 threw jabs at each other all evening. I paid attention to that one over there as well, too. You may not get too excited about the CD7 race. You might think of it as sort of a lost cause out there, but CD7 is actually a pretty important congressional district for Southern Arizona. It essentially extends from Southwest Tucson, think the casino, Old Tucson, all the way out to Yuma and south to the border. And so this is a pretty big congressional district.
It even includes chunks of Maricopa County. I think the town of Maricopa, or maybe like Levine. Anyway, it does go up into Maricopa County, interestingly. So it is a vast swath of land with different sort of media markets in it. Probably three, I would think, right? So Yuma, Tucson, and parts of the Phoenix market.
Without a doubt. And most likely, I hate to call myself a political Nostradamus over here, but most likely the winner of the Democrat primary is going to be a strong favorite to win the general, because CD7's got a 2-to-1 Democrat voter registration advantage compared to the Republican candidates. And although I think we'll get both sets here on this show over here, particularly once we get into the general election, a lot of eyes are being paid attention to this Democrat primary, because the winner is going to come out as the heavy favorite in this particular race. And this is coming in just a few weeks. Like, I know it doesn't sound like it when you're thinking of elections and you think of November, but ever since we've gone to mail-in ballots, it's always election month, not election day. And this election, you know, comes up in July, but the ballots get mailed out on June 28th. June 18th, and today is May 28th. So we're talking like less than 3 weeks right now, and ballots are already going to be out for the Democrat primary, the winner being the heavy favorite in this race. And although there are five candidates vying for that one, this is really shaping up to be a two-horse race. Former Maricopa or Pima County Supervisor Adelita Grijalva as the favorite, and Daniel Hernandez, most noted, of course, for being both a state House representative and somebody who was on the scene providing aid to Gabby Giffords when she was shot back a decade and a half ago here at Oracle and Ina. These are the two leading candidates for this race by far. And if you watched any part of that debate last night, you could see that these were by far the two leading candidates. And they went out of their way to take opposing sides on environmental issues and then to jointly, of course, beat up on Donald Trump, as all five candidates pretty much took that position, not shockingly, as you could imagine. Yeah. But I think Daniel Hernandez has come across as probably the most moderate of the pack over here. We're going to try to get him on the show next week. I've reached out to the Hernandez camp, and they'd like to do a little fundraiser as well, too. So I've offered them space over at River and Campbell. And so it's looking like Monday, the 9th of June, we're going to have Daniel Hernandez make an appearance over on the stage at St. Phil's Plaza. If anyone would like to meet him and exchange some words or shake some hands or do what you want to do with your political candidates out there. But the CD7 race is getting hot and heavy. You're about to see a big boost in advertising for that one, because quite frankly, the money's going to be spent early in this race on the Democrat primary. Now, though it's the middle of summer right now, this is absolutely something we should all be paying attention to, because that winner is going to come out as probably a 10-1 favorite, quite frankly, against the Republican candidate. As well in the news today, Southwest Airlines, our biggest airlines flying out of TEA, announces today is the day they begin charging for bags on their new bookings. And so your first bag at Southwest Airlines is going to be $35. Second bag is going to be $45. Last year, Southwest announced that they made $83 million on just third bag fees alone, because the first two were free. So if $83 million came in off of the third bag, what do you think one and two are worth over there, Matt?
Yeah, right.
This is pretty serious money. But and a lot of people are upset about this one, right? They don't like Southwest moving
this
away
from... This is classic Southwest Airlines. And this, between this and the cattle call thing, and the fares, right, this is what, for many, many years, they've really emphasized, hey, our ticket includes your baggage. So it's a big change for especially their regulars.
Without a doubt. And so... The assigned seat cattle call thing has not started yet, however. Just the baggage fees start today.
Yeah, they are going to start doing reserve seats in the near future, I believe. I think.
So they're saying that the reserve seats tickets will start right around the beginning of 2026, but bookings with the reserve seats are expected to happen in the second half of 2025. And given that we're almost there right now, this could be any day, quite frankly, they're going to change their plans. And to me, I'm okay with this, Matt. I'm for market price. I'm for what the market demands on this one. Airlines have had a tremendously, you know, humongous pricing challenge for an awful long time. I mean, you take a look and you see how there are all these memes about, you know, really large people not fitting in one airline seat. We've had this one-size-fits-all model for airline passengers and luggage for an awful long time, and I'm for, you know, charging for this. Think if you send a package on UPS, you know what you've got to do? You've got to take some measurements and put that thing on a scale. How far are we away from that happening with people?
And how far is the ACLU going to have the biggest case of their existence? But yeah, I mean, I totally get it. And airlines are very competitive, and airlines, between the very, very high hurdle cost of capital to run an airline and the whims of the public and everything, it's a really tough business. So Southwest did a really neat thing 10, 15 years ago where they learned how to play the arbitrage game and bet correctly, had a very long run of betting correctly on fuel prices, which direction they were going, and they were getting futures on it. And this is one thing that 15 years ago, they just ran away from the competition on. And then, of course, they were able to market the no baggage. So times change, right? And they're realizing that for them, this is a good move right now to start charging for baggage. But they have had several things where they've kind of outfoxed the market over the years. So let's see if their management is as they have been over the last couple decades, if they're kind of smart and making the right move.
In every other airline out there as well, too, you just see this drive for people to avoid the baggage charges. And we've got like carry-on bags that fit just the absolute largest envelope that they could possibly fit to fit inside that box. And then you get a second personal item, right? And, and so people are traveling now with a pair of bags either way. They're just the largest envelope that they could fit underneath the seat and the largest one they could fit on in the carry-out up top. I wonder how long we go before even that carry-on bag up top ends up with a charge over here. I can see that one coming in the near future, and I think you could say we've called it here first on the Morning Voice if you hear that one come up. Also happening this week, on the 2nd of June, the city of Tucson is raising their parking rates. The fees are still going to be awkwardly set at $1 an hour no matter what time of day, no matter what time of year that is, and I think that's problem number one, and we'll get into that as one of our fixes here on the city of Tucson. But they're moving the parking rate charges from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday to 9 to 7 Monday through Saturday. And so suddenly parking downtown will cost money on Saturday, and it's going to cost money now in the evenings. And so this is much to the chagrin, of course, of service industry workers who, you know, perhaps start their shift at 5 p.m. Maybe you could roll in at 4:50 and not pay that meter for your 5 o'clock shift at, say, Charo, you know, steak or something along these lines. Well, suddenly you're going to have to think about that because you've got a couple hours now of paying to park. And I'm not opposed to necessarily charging for parking either. This is just a public service announcement over here. That's also going to be part of our plan to fix up Tucson and our city cleaning episode over here in our first hour. But one more bit of news as well. We've got Arizona baseball in the College World Series, right?
That is right.
Our 44th appearance in the College World Series, which I believe is sixth most in the entire nation, the fifth year in a row that the Wildcats will be participating in the NCAA tournament. They're playing the Cal Poly Mustangs on Friday, May 30th at 1 p.m., and you can catch that game on ESPN+. So we will root for the Wildcats on that one. But why don't we take a quick break over here, and we come back. Matt and I are going to fix up Tucson and a little bit of summer cleaning for you on The Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Krueger. We got a great hour coming up over here. We're going to talk about ways this summer that we could fix up the city of Tucson. But I don't mean just the city. We've got to start with our own homes. We've got to start with our own businesses. We've got to start by taking a little bit of civic pride over here this summer, right? Every year we get the opportunity in the off season to clean up our businesses, right? This is the time you're going to see us repaint or reorganize the stock rooms or storerooms or whatnot. But it goes much bigger than the internal stuff that you can't see as a guest. It goes to what we do outside, right? It goes to the parts that we take pride in. There's a great account I follow on Facebook, and I recommend that maybe you guys pay attention to this one. It's called Revitalize or Die. I'm going to read you a little quote about this, you know, municipal pride over here that he wrote just a couple days ago. He says, "Civic pride isn't just about banners. It's about brooms. It's not about the slogans we hang, but about the sidewalks we sweep. Because pride isn't passive. It's not a thing we say. It's the action that we take. We show love through maintenance. We show respect by caring for what we have. Paint the bench. Pull the weeds. Pick up the trash. When we care for our places, they become places worth caring for." And that resonated a lot with me, I think. This is something that we all need to show a little bit more civic pride here in Tucson. And I reach out and implore you, our listeners, to participate in that this summer. Let's figure out a way to make Tucson a better place, right? It's easy to sit back from my bully pulpit here on a microphone and pick on politicians about why things went wrong or what we should do better. But we all have to have a part in the solution. Everybody can come out and name a problem, right? That's pretty easy to talk about something you don't like. But what are the solutions that we can do to help make Tucson a better place? First and foremost, it starts with a pretty obvious response, and that's our response to the homeless situation. It's been a continued problem, and as Matt talked about at the beginning of the hour with the news update over here, there was a little bit of a sweep through the River Loop in just the last few days. On May 22nd, a number of individuals were picked up over there, but this has to be a much bigger, stronger, and more consistent response. Not just one that makes the papers every once in a while so we can pat ourselves on the back and say that we're doing something. This has to be a response that we do regularly. to let the world know, to let the city know that it is unacceptable to camp in our parks. It's unacceptable to make places like the Chuck Huckleberry Loop, which was, to me, one of the most desirable places in Tucson. Like, one of the neatest things we have in the entire community is this 100-plus-mile loop where you could ride your bike or walk your dogs or go for a jog without almost ever having to hit a traffic light, right? As there's an underpass under almost every major thoroughfare. This is so cool. And it's so amazing to have seen this reach completion. And suddenly the thing that should have been the most exciting part of recreation and leisure for us and our youth and our pets and everything has become an area where I'm quite frankly afraid to take my daughters on these days, particularly at dusk and even more so after dark. And that's a real shame. We ought to start and continue cleaning up the loop. I'm going to work to take the portion over by St. Philip's Plaza. I've already sort of silently over a number of years continued to clean up underneath the bridges in that area as we end up with significant homeless populations setting up camp around there. And we're going to work to try to make that section of the loop a little bit nicer place. And if everybody were to take a bit or a piece, sort of like how we have an adopt a highway or something like that, we could probably find a way to clean up this amazing resource and make it a better place for ourselves and for our children. Second, panhandling, right? Panhandling has been illegal on the medians in the city of Tucson since forever. And while, yes, they tried to use the federal grants pass case as some sort of excuse to not enforce, Ordinance 2016-30 still to this day makes panhandling illegal. And with the grants pass case being overturned, we can now enforce that. And I still to this day haven't seen an awful lot of enforcement of the panhandle. It's a terrible look for the city of Tucson. You're not helping the individuals when you're giving them money. You're giving them a extra day worth of fentanyl. As Josh Jacobson from Tucson Crime Free has come out and said, the market price of a pill of fentanyl right now in southern Arizona is 50 cents. That dollar or two that you give to that individual is four pills of fentanyl right there. The county was kind enough to allow organizations such as Tucson Crime Free to put up signs at many, you know, prominent medians that say, you know, say no to panhandling and say yes to those agencies helping those in need. Why can't we do that in the city of Tucson? Why can't we have that part, you know, working? It would cost nothing. The business community would pick up the tab for that in about 0.2 seconds over here. I'd personally help write the check for dozens of those signs right now, and I know that there are many others like me who would gladly contribute to something like this, Matt. It would seems like such an easy solution.
Mm-hmm. Once those signs went up at the intersection in the county area, and there was one right just down the street from here, the panhandler stopped.
Yeah, it's amazing how that works, right? I've seen one on Palo Verde as well, too.
Ajo and Alvernon.
Yeah, and so these are effective, right? They're going to choose other corners, or at least just not even the median. It's not just a traffic safety issue. It's a public nuisance, and it's a terrible look. Imagine if you were flying into town because you were the next Caterpillar, the latest, greatest in business development coming here, and you saw this on your way to your site for your future corporate headquarters. Would you choose Southern Arizona?
And I'm sure a lot of people would argue, because you and I have both heard it, and say, oh, well, you see that in a lot of cities, and that may be the case, but you know, you see people out there with animals. One time I saw a guy with a little miniature, super miniature chihuahua, and this dog was shivering on a median. It was hot outside. He wasn't shivering because he was cold. He was scared to death. And one honk, an animal just, you know, runs, and all of a sudden something very awful could happen. So, I mean, it's dangerous for a lot of reasons. And sometimes people bring people along or animals along with them that, you know, may not be, you know, able to stay calm when a bunch of cars are honking or something happens. Loud noises.
Without a doubt, half of these animals are used for sympathy to give to. You know, my wife, bless her heart, Katarina, drives around with dog food in little bags, like in her car, to give to these individuals, which is probably better than giving them money for fentanyl. But nonetheless, like it's still a continued problem that just a little bit of enforcement and a little bit of signage could work for. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we need to do too is take back our parks. Parks are meant for kids, right? The idea to have some open space for kids to run around around in that perhaps live in apartments or townhomes or in you know, smaller starter properties where they don't have room to stretch their legs and play frisbee and have a jungle gym and these sort of things. And our parks have gotten incredibly, incredibly dangerous. I saw just in the news today, they announced that Joseph Blair was behind the creation of a pair of new basketball courts that they're going to build.
Over near Park Mall, I believe, kind of south of Park Mall a bit.
Yeah, Palo Verde Park, Broadway and Kolb over there. And so I'm really excited to see that one. I love Joseph Blair. He's been a great community activist for a long time. He's going to name this one after his mom, the Judith Blair Courts. And I thought that was super neat. And a nice little piece there by City Councilman Paul Cunningham talking about the city support for it. NBA player Kyle Kuzma donated $25,000 to these courts as well, too. So it's pretty neat to see that one coming. But we've got to take back our parks. We're going to take a quick break over here, Matt Neely. Well, when we come back, we've got another segment or two on fixing up the city of Tucson for our summer cleaning. And Congressman Juan Ciscomani coming up at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m.
Don't forget to follow and like 10:30 The Voice on Facebook. We'll be doing some Facebook live streaming in the future and here and there. So you can watch it there. You can find out what's coming up on The Morning Voice and our other KVOI shows. Again, 10:30 The Voice on Facebook. Give us a follow. Hit that like button.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., The Morning Voice brings you all kinds of local Tucson-specific news. It's one of the things that makes the show so neat is that you get the opportunity to hear about the old Pueblo. Try not to mix in a whole lot of federal stuff or state stuff. You can get that anywhere, but where do you get local Tucson news broadcast live in Tucson? Right over here on your 10:30 a.m. on your dial on Monday mornings. You've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell. The Engagement Hour, always bringing in all kinds of awesome politicians and local civic leaders. On Wednesdays, you get me, right? The little bit of food for thought over here, the intersection of business and restaurants and politics. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley. All kinds of neat things happening from the University of Arizona. We make up your morning voice. Before the break, Matt, we were talking about ways to fix up Tucson in our little bit of summer cleaning episode over here. And one of the ways I think we could continue to work on this would be to fix some of the parking situation downtown. Let's talk about that a little bit, right? We talked about parking rates were going up. People were getting upset that suddenly parking was going to be a buck. But the whole model is wrong for downtown Tucson over here. One needs to only look at, say, the Disneyland model, which is really the correct model for parking, which is a giant, you know, you've got the park, and then it's surrounded by this huge, huge parking lots, and then trams to bring people to the inside. Yeah. And Walt Disney laid this one out, you know, 70 years ago. And I certainly don't worship at the altar of Walt Disney. There's a whole lot of things he did wrong in life, right? If you were African-American or of Jewish descent, you don't want to be talking about Walt Disney in 2025. But when it came to parking, this guy was a visionary, right? And he figured out a way.
You just have to remember what Disney character, you have to remember you're in the ER lot or something.
Right.
You have to remember what Disney character you parked in.
But this is the kind of thing that we should have had with our modern streetcar, Matt. If you think about it, the streetcar starts at Helen and Speedway, right? TMC. The problem is, like, there's nowhere to park your car around there to take the streetcar and to go downtown. There's no free, there's no giant lot that makes it really easy to hop on the streetcar. The Disney model would have this large lot that you would park in and then take you into the dense area with some semblance of environmentally friendly, or if you're in the city of Tucson, reduced or free fee mass transit in some capacity. But the problem is we don't even have like the parking lot at the source of this. So like, why would I take the streetcar to go to downtown when I have to park at Speedway and Helen in front of TMC, a place where they already also charge me for parking? We've essentially don't have the incentive that we need there, which is like a 1,000-car parking lot somewhere on some, you know, abandoned lot in Midtown. And I could pick up a few spots on First Avenue and Stone where something like this could exist. And then you could truck people right into downtown and you'd have them parking in a place that wasn't desirable.
You mean like, such as when the conquistadors put a golf tournament on and they have a place that doesn't have a lot of convenient parking. And so they just have an easy place for people to park, hop on a shuttle bus, and bam.
Sure, you know, exactly like that, man. Shocking how this works, right? When you think of you know, these empty parking lots in the Tucson Mall, and you think of these empty parking lots in the Elkhorn Mall, how convenient would it be if you could hop on a streetcar and take you into downtown there? Now, suddenly, you've got something. But instead, we've made a big mistake, and one that I think continues even in the restaurant business, is that we have the price for parking, Matt, at the same rate no matter the time of day, no matter the day of the week. The parking downtown is $1 an hour no matter what, whether there's a concert or there's nothing going on and it's a Tuesday night in the middle of summer. And that's part of the problem. We've had this problem in the restaurant business for forever because I hand you a paper menu. Variable pricing isn't something that we can do quite regularly in the restaurant world, right? You can't suddenly have the restaurant be a little busier and a hamburger costs $2 more. Not because the restaurants don't want to do it. It's because we don't have the technology to do it, right? Airlines have been doing this to us forever. We talked about Southwest Airlines.
Again, if you are in the revenue management department of an airline, that is witchcraft, black magic, because you can buy the same ticket on three different days and it will cost you maybe four different prices, you know, maybe 10 different prices.
So as we talked about on the show a couple months ago, man, when you've got $1 an hour parking right in front of the hotel, right in front of the Charo Steak, right in front of the playground or hub, right in front of the hot downtown spaces, it's $1 an hour, no matter what time it is. Well, guess what? I'm not going to go look for a spot in the garage that's going to cost me a minimum of $5 or $8. The incentives downtown are all wrong. It's cheaper to park on the street right in front of the business than it is the far more convenient garage located only a block or two away. And so by having this fixed pricing model, we've created a situation where I'm giving you an incentive to drive around the block four, five, six, seven laps looking for the dopamine hit of that cheap parking spot for $1 right in front of the place, right? So you're adding to downtown's traffic by doing these laps looking for this cheap parking. The street should be more expensive than the garages. There should be and could be variable pricing for the street parking on downtown. A big big concert day at the Rialto, it might be $5 an hour. There's nothing wrong with that. The city should realize the market value of those parking spaces. They're not wrong in saying by charging for parking on Saturday night, we're going to open up some spaces. They're actually correct. The thing is, they're not charging enough right now. They're giving you this one-size-fits-all pricing. When now that we've got the app, like, could you do variable pricing on the app? You could. There's no paper menu like there is in restaurants, right? The fix for parking downtown is variable rates for different times of the day based on the parking app.
And how much do you think, you being in the restaurant business, how much do you think restaurants would really appreciate, like, maybe free or super cheap parking Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays?
Right. This would be great. These are the incentives you should have to get retail to come downtown. If, for example, there's all the business they can handle downtown on Friday and Saturday nights right now. Like, go down Saturday nights this weekend at you know, 9 or 10 p.m. and tell me the place isn't happening. It's actually happening. But notice it's happening at the times when the parking is free over there, right? Like, the one time they could capture revenue, they're not charging for it. But when the restaurants on, say, the east side of Congress that are starving for business, right, on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, there's next to no foot traffic on that side. They don't even open Oban and Bascaria and some of these places in the day on the weekdays because there's so little traffic. Guess what? That parking costs money. The parking spaces shouldn't all be downtown the same rate and at the same time of the week. And because we have the app, this would actually be a pretty easy fix and one that I would recommend the city of Tucson do a little bigger study on and take a look at some of these parking norms, because we can actually reduce vehicular traffic with this and end up with some spaces open for the big ballers that are absolutely willing to pay. If you want to pay $5, you know, an hour to pimp park in front of Oban, like, we will be your Huckleberry in the city of Tucson. Do you think we need the money? I do, right?
Like, so I'm gonna channel my inner Grant Kruger now and bring, as you are so good at doing, and bring this back to what you opened with. Look to the airlines.
Yes.
Shall we look to the airlines for pricing?
Yeah, yes. I think so. I think that ultimately we learn from the variable pricing on the airline model. Variable pricing and parking happens in so many different communities. Go park downtown Phoenix for a Suns game and tell me it's $1 an hour. Right? It's absolutely not. Like, we're doing it all wrong over here. And then we wonder, like, why we don't get the economic
development. I mean, maybe against the Clippers, but, you know, that's different.
Fair enough. One of the neat things that is popping up in the city of Tucson, though, is this community corridors tool. And this one has become codified as of the 17th of April. And I touched on this, I think, briefly last week. But the community corridors tool is a new zoning overlay that's going to allow for sort of a twofold of places that were zoned commercial but have residential zoning on them as well, too, sort of like a dual hitter lot. And it was created to make more affordable housing, to take some of these strip malls in Tucson that really can't be a business anymore, and maybe you could turn them into affordable housing complex, you know, a small row townhomes or a bank of apartments or something. But it's an interesting dual hitter. And this community corridors tool is going to allow certain businesses that couldn't have existed under our somewhat draconian zoning laws to possibly exist. I've had under contract, saying this in the press, I think, for the first time here, but under contract, the Chase Bank at Campbell and Grant for about 6 months now, fighting to take that former Chase Bank space and convert it into a restaurant. And there's a tiny portion of the back lot that has some residential zoning on it. And for that reason, this property has sat empty now for the better portion of a calendar year. Now, mind you, this residential zoning part of this building has been a parking lot since 1971.
Okay.
Right? It's not hurting anybody. Like, it's been a parking lot since the Nixon administration.
But any change to an empty parking lot now.
Yes.
Right?
And so it's been.
It's the same with the Shell station, by the way, 22nd and Alvernon.
Yes.
Empty, abandoned, people sleeping, people camping out at it. But once somebody said, I want to turn it into a McDonald's drive-thru, you know, all hell broke loose.
Yep. And so the new community corridors tool is going to be a zoning tool used to fix some of these problems. Now, the drive-through part is a little prohibited still by community corridors tool, and I can understand it. There's no shortage of drive-throughs. But you know why we're getting all the drive-throughs, Matt? Because the drive-through models are one of the only businesses that can fit inside of the ridiculous zoning rules we have and parking rules. When you build a 700-square-foot salad and go, it doesn't need that many parking spaces.
Right.
Angie's Lobster Rolls is a tiny little box. The little box that is Dutch Brothers that's going up right now at Campbell and Fort Lowell on the northwest corner over there. Tiny little footprint.
Right.
And so your zoning rules are forcing the very drive-throughs on you that you don't want.
Zoning rules and spiked minimum wages.
Yes.
So all these things kind of come together,
yes.
Right?
Isn't it funny how the things that we think were helping.
And people trashing bathrooms.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. All these things that we think we're being empathetic and helping with, our zoning rules, our minimum wage are forcing us into the exact things we don't want in our communities. And so I do give the city of Tucson credit, and I don't always do that here on this show, but for this community corridors tool, look this one up if you're a developer. There's going to be some interesting zoning changes coming up, and I think it's going to create some new developments, both in terms of housing and in terms of business coming up here. But let's take a quick break. There's a new hotel coming downtown Tucson. We're going to talk about the Moxie coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is our first week of summer episode over here. It is getting a little toasty out there in the Old Pueblo. Still great at night, though. Certainly my favorite time of the year. We're talking about Tucson and ways to clean it up with a little summer cleaning and our summer cleanup episode. You know, downtowns gets a lot of help from Rio Nuevo, and they've taken a lot of criticism over the last month or so with the Borderlands Brewery thing. But Rio Nuevo does a lot for downtown and brings a lot of economic development into spaces that wouldn't necessarily be filled. And we finally get news that they're breaking ground for the Moxie Hotel at 55 North 5th Avenue. Think of that right next to the MLK Apartments, in between the MLK Apartments and Hotel Congress. There's that empty lot where there's been like volleyball courts and other little interesting things over the years. The Moxie is going to be a pretty neat hotel aimed at younger folks. I'm not a younger folk anymore, in full disclosure to our listeners, but I've stayed at a Moxie in downtown Phoenix, and it's a somewhat Spartan room, but located in hip urban locations with the idea that you don't spend a lot of time in your room, right? Come down to our cash bar down below. They don't even have like a bell desk. You actually like get your room keys from the bar and they give you a free drink.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be worse, you know? Like you're already speaking my languages over here. This is fine. And so I'm pretty excited to see the Moxie come, right? Scott Steitler, Rudy Dabdub have helped bring, you know, both the AC Marriott, and now they're responsible for this project as well too. These are some of the coolest, newest hotel developments that Tucson's seen in decades, and a good portion of that help comes from Rio Nuevo. The problem is, As we've discussed on the show before, Rio Nuevo can only really help out businesses that generate sales tax. And there's only so many things out there that do sales tax, that create sales tax, that aren't restaurants. And we end up with just too many restaurants downtown. So one of my fixes for Tucson would be to find a way to extra incentivize, create an additional tax break or sales tax rebate for businesses that create sales tax that are not restaurants. If you're going to open up a camera shop, a dress shop, a boutique, anything you can think of that creates sales tax, why don't we give double the incentives to businesses like that downtown? Why don't we figure out a way to create a new Johnny Gibson's Market, a new retail center in some capacity by incentivizing what we want? Because right now, we're incentivizing more restaurants than I think the market can bear, and that creates a difficult problem for that environment downtown. One of the other things I think we can do to fix things up downtown, and I brought this idea up to Rio Nuevo, and I understand they're going to start to bring this to fruition in just the next couple of weeks over here, is ID scanner technology. Okay. In our restaurants at Union,
oh, that's right,
and the Maverick, for example, we get a lot of fake IDs. Right on one big night, like right before Dead Day, right, the big, you know, going out, you know, when the finals end, sort of thing, we'll take away over 100 fake IDs a night.
You actually hold them, and
yes, we keep them, and we do not return them to you. And if you don't like that, you can call law enforcement, and nobody, of course, ever chooses to make that call.
Like the guy called up and said somebody stole the drugs out of my car.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, yeah. One of the ways that we've found great success in figuring out these fake IDs, because they're getting so good these days, Matt, so good of what you can order on the internet, are through these really high-tech scanner technologies. Think of it like an iPad, but with like this infrared light, and you insert this, you know, the card into this ATM machine, and it connects to the DMV databases of 43 of the 50 U.S. states to see whether this ID is real or not. But the neat part about what it can do is it can store that ID and say, hey, this is Matt Neely's 37th visit to Union Public House or to the Maverick. I can also ban Matt Neely. I can say, Matt, the last time you came in, you had 37 Busch Lights and caused an awful lot of problems. And I can annotate that. Yeah. So the next time the bouncer sees your ID, he goes, oh, this guy caused me a beef.
Wow.
So my idea for downtown, because we've had a lot of problems with fights and issues,
yes,
with the nightclub focus we have downtown, would be for Rio Nuevo to buy a dozen of these machines and network them all together. They can be networked so that the entire downtown bar industry could annotate and red flag bad players. You cause a fight at the Cobra Bar, guess what? You're banned. You're not going to get into Hotel Congress the next day. It wouldn't cost an awful lot of money, and I think it would save us from a number of bad players. All it takes is a few bad apples to ruin what's going on downtown, and there's a lot of positive energy. The bar hopping scene down there is great, and I want to support that, but the guys that are causing world star fights out there every Friday and Saturday night making TMZ Tucson, not great. That's not the image we want to have. And I think that there's a way to use technology to prevent these problems from continuing to occur. And I think it's a great way for us to help fix downtown Tucson would be for ID scanner technology. Well, we're going to take another quick break over here. We've got a whole nother hour of the Morning Voice coming up. Juan Ciscomani coming up at the quarter of the hour. We're going to go over restaurant news starting at about 8:03. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on the Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk. Welcome back to hour two of the Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. You know, in the hospitality business over here, there are certainly seasons, and this week happens to be about the beginning of our slow season, right? Summertime. This is time to work on the business as opposed to in the business over here for sure. But there certainly are some restaurant news articles still popping up over here that aren't just closures. I try to avoid just giving you the negative, as obviously a lot of businesses choose to close up or even reduce their hours very substantially in the summer months. First and foremost, the Pima County Health Department is on the move, packing up shop from their longstanding offices on South Country Club Drive. The Pima County Health Department is moving into the Northwest Service Center, located on West Miracle Mile. For those that aren't paying attention, that's the old Pete Tuntas bowling alley over there, right?
Yeah.
Where we spent an awful lot of money to save that block wall. and still have that bowling sign in front of that the new health department that's showing up over there. But again, I can speak for all of us in the restaurant business. We're not knocking the health department on their move. In fact, as somebody that gets a lot of heavy-handed enforcement from the health department, we're offering to help their move. So if anybody from the health department needs us to show up with pickup trucks, you know, a few crew, help carry your bags, perhaps cater like the setup for you guys over here, whatever you need, we got your back, Pima County Health Department.
This is not against the Pima County. So I will continue Grant Kruger's theme. This is not about the Pima County Health Department or the friendly restaurant inspectors. This is about a building that was supposed to be a $7 million project, including the cost of the bowling alley.
Correct. I remember.
And it is the finished product is $40 million. I just cannot believe. And one of the excuses that was given was because they said when they bought it, they looked at it and they said the bowling alley is not tall enough. It was the roof was not high enough.
Yes.
And I'm like, you guys didn't like measure that before you bought it to know that it would not suit your needs?
I can fondly remember sitting at a Pima County Board of Supervisors meeting, and this must have been probably like 2018 or 2019 or so, and Representative Supervisor Allie Miller spoke up at that meeting about this purchase and said, every time we sell something in Pima County, the market is terrible and we don't make any money. And every time we buy, we're always like buying at the top of the market over here. And she really, really questioned this purchase.
They paid extra for it for the kitchen equipment. That because a kitchen, I guess they just redone their kitchen, their food service operation. Again, I don't care if it was ARPA money or federal money. It's our money or the Chinese lenders, whoever you want to say. But it's $40 million of taxpayer money was spent on a business that they told us with a straight face was going to be a $7 million project. This is epic bad. This is just epic bad Pima County management. Once again.
Well, imagine if you were a business person and you went five times over budget. We're not talking about 10 or 15%. I'll give you the COVID hall pass. I'll give you even some inflation hall pass on this one, right? Like there's been a lot of inflation that's happened during that time too. So I could see there being some cost overages, but when you start talking about 5 or 6X,
right.
Like you're talking about like gross mismanagement, quite frankly.
It's mind-blowing. And then the critical need was for a public health services clinic. If you remember.
I do.
That was the critical need. Who's the first people moving in? The restaurant inspectors. That's the first group moving into this thing where there's a critical need for a public health clinic.
Well, as somebody as part of the state and Tucson restaurant associations over here, we'd gladly help you, health department.
Gladly
we love you,
them.
Inspectors over there.
Restaurant inspectors.
Very much so. Lots of love over here from the restaurant business. And it is a more central location, and I am happy to at least see some life happening on Miracle Mile, right? The police substation.
Sure.
These county buildings have cleaned up that area a fair bit. You know, it may have gone way, way over budget, but it is lighter and brighter, and there's at least some activity going on over there that is not as illicit as perhaps some of the more famous activity that used to happen on Miracle Mile. What's also coming up over the next couple weeks is Father's Day, right? On Father's Day weekend, we've got the World Margarita Championships. This isn't just Tucson, Matt. This is the entire world. And that is on the 14th of June at Westward Look Resort. You can get tickets at SACA's website, Southern Arizona Council the Arts. They've got over 30 restaurants participating, including our Reforma, duking it out over what will be the absolute best margarita in the entire world. Tickets are $80 for general admission, $100 for VIP, and you get in an hour early and get to sample those margaritas.
Okay.
So that could be a fun little treat for dad if you're looking for something to do on Father's Day. As we've talked about before, Father's Day is no Mother's Day when it comes to the restaurant business over here. It's actually one of the slower restaurant days over the years, you know?
Like, no respect.
None. And it just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. Also in the news today, the Tucson City of Gastronomy is hiring a new deputy director, someone to work under Director Jonathan Mabry. They're offering a $60,000 a year salary and someone looking to bring a little energy here into the Tucson City of Gastronomy. You know, this is a designation we got from UNESCO in 2015. And I worry that that we haven't done enough with this brand to keep the city of gastronomy still relevant. We're sort of like the high school athlete wearing his varsity jacket 10 years after the fact. And maybe it doesn't quite fit us as well, but like we're holding on to like that track and field medal that we got a decade ago. In the same way we're holding on to the Caterpillar employment and we're holding on to these decade old wins. But like it's been a long time since we've had this designation. And I think that we're going to have to really figure out how to do more with this brand or just let it pass off into the wind over here, because it's certainly aging and maybe not like a fine Bordeaux. And that's no disrespect to the individuals at Visit Tucson or to Jonathan trying to put this one together. But I just see this one slipping and this brand fading. And so they're looking for a new director and or executive deputy director. And those applications are due by May 30th. So if you know anybody interested in that public sector that loves to do events and energize a brand, I'd love to hear from them. And Jonathan Mabry and the Tucson City of Gastronomy would love to hear from you.
All right.
Also, on a unionization front, the stagehands at the Arizona Theater Company have voted to unionize 15-4. I bring this up because union news hit restaurants kind of in the teeth in Southern Arizona over this last couple of years with Prep and Pastry. We've had Nate Aries on. He was Flores Market Run. Those grocery store guys started to unionize, and it sort of bedeviled a portion of his business and actually led to the closure of Flores Market Run. And it shows how sometimes the pendulum in labor swings too far in one direction or another. I can remember a little over a decade ago, there was a big produce purveyor in town, Ron's Produce, right? And they were one of the major produce purveyors, and their drivers decided that they were going to unionize, right? And he had maybe 20 trucks and 30 drivers, and don't quote me on the exact numbers, but this was the size and scope. He was a big player in Southern Arizona, and he was an older gentleman, and when his employees said, "We're going to unionize, and if you don't raise our rates 15 or 20%, we're going to strike and we're out the door." And you know what Ron did? He closed up his business. He packed up and left and said, "I'm close to retirement age. I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore. I don't need the hassle. And if you unionize this deep, if you make the labor go up 20%, that's the entire model. There's nothing left anyway for me and my kids." Right. So see, have fun. Don't let the door hit you in the butt on the way out. Right. And literally 30 people lost their jobs. And this is another case where like the theater business has to just be struggling. Like this can't possibly be a win right now that is going well for them, right? Like they are going to have to really think about how many people go to theaters right now. And if you force a wage increase on a business model like this that's shaky, even on a good day, right? Like on a good day, live theater is an antiquated entertainment venue. And I'm not hating on it. I love live theater. I think it's super cool. But it's cool in a way that old school things are cool that you know, maybe don't quite fit inside the box. Like driving around a 1957 Bel Air is cool. You don't daily drive it. It's just cool for a Sunday drive. And I think theater is kind of that way too. And so when these employees unionize, they threaten the ability of businesses like this to even exist. Business models that were questionable even on a good day. And so I don't see this continuing to happen in the full service restaurant business. We've talked about tips and the tipped employees pretty much are never going to agree to split their tips equally in any capacity. And so the unionization of full service restaurants is not likely, but you see grocery stores, you're seeing theaters, you're seeing, you know, the Starbucks of the world make these shifts like this. And it's really, quite frankly, hurting the businesses because you're seeing so many closures based on these unionizations that who wins in the end? Does the worker win by driving these businesses out of business? Does society win? I don't think they do. I think ultimately this hurts society when we've moved too far to the left as far as unions go. This isn't the meatpacking industry of, you know, the 19-teens over here. Like, the world has changed quite a bit. And for the most part, our employee conditions are pretty good. And we're all employment at will. If it's not that good, you've got the right to leave and to go seek other employment. And the free market should be able to sort that out for you in some capacity. And so I watch all the unionization stuff with a little bit of fear, because you just never know how this is going to affect these businesses. But having seen multiple others close based on unionization, it worries me the future of the Arizona Theater Company and just theater in general as an entertainment.
And to your point, look at the whole minimum wage movement that we've had over the last 5-6 years, it's helped some employees. And so some employees have gotten the raise, and then some of them got 100% pay cut.
Yeah.
Right. So, or they've gotten their hours cut or whatever. So yeah, it works out well for some people.
Yeah.
Right.
We employ less busboys and less hostesses and less server assistants than we did in the past because of these minimum wage increases. And it's sad to say, because we want to give those first jobs for people. I get calls all the time, Matt, where people are like, hey, I'd love a summer job for my high school son or daughter or whatnot. And I say, man, we're not on Nantucket Island over here. Like, summer jobs like are hard to come by. We're trying to maintain the jobs we have right now the city of Tucson.
To the point you've made time and time and time again.
Yes.
This is a slow time.
Yeah, this is it. Like, we're hanging on with our nails getting dragged across the floor. Like, we don't necessarily have time for people that want to come in and just work for 2 or 3 months and then they're out the door. So those kind of jobs have really dried up quite a bit in the restaurant business. And to me, it's heartbreaking because it takes away those first employment opportunities, those chances for kids to learn what it's like to get a paycheck, to actually look at your first paycheck. Do you remember when you looked at your first paycheck and suddenly saw taxes removed? You were like, wait a minute, I was supposed to be getting $2.13 an hour. That was the server pay back then. I was supposed to be getting $2.13 an hour and I'm getting nothing out of this. What is this FICA and FUTA and SUTA? Who are these people and why are they taking my money? This is an absolutely fantastic learning experience for our youth. And it's really heartbreaking to see those opportunities often go away, sacrificed at the mantle of minimum wage, where suddenly those jobs are being paid at the same rate as capable adults. Well, who are you going to choose to hire? The free market's just going to pick somebody with a greater skill set and a little more life experience than somebody coming in right off the streets that is addicted to their phone and maybe not even used to working in any sort of full service hospitality environment. And so certainly a damaging thing and something to look out for this summer. If you're looking for jobs for your kids over there, there are certain places, I'm sure if you're hiring at the pool bar or something at La Paloma, there might be a spot. But in local restaurants, it's tougher in the summer. And everybody needs to get out there and support your local establishments. Well, let's take a quick break. We should have U.S. Congressman Juan Ciscomani coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Krueger, and we've got the great fortune today to be joined by Arizona House Representative Juan Ciscomani is in the office. Good morning, Juan.
Hey, Grant, good morning.
Hey, thanks so much for taking time out of your Wednesday to join us on The Morning Voice today.
Oh, you're very welcome, man. Always happy to be on.
Hey, you've had a really busy week this week in Congress over there. Like, let's talk about what's going on.
Yeah, it was a busy week. It was honestly a busy month leading up to it. The final week was pretty, pretty intense, pretty hectic. The last 48 hours, even more so. But we got the one big beautiful bill passed on the early hours of the morning on Thursday, and the bill now off to the Senate. But we'd love to kind of like break that bill down a little bit for you and the audience as well.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about it. I mean, this one was as tight as nails, right? 215 to 214 was the vote?
That's right. It passed by one vote. Should have passed by three votes, but a couple of members weren't able to make it back to the actual vote. But yeah, the score we expected at that time was 217, 214, but we'll take the win with 215.
No, a win is a win for sure. And this was a win for a lot of employees and a lot of the business community that employ people as well, too.
That's right. I mean, it's a full package. Basically, I mean, it's also the reconciliation package. It's technically HR 1. Most people call it the one big beautiful bill. That's how the president branded it. And then it just stuck, and then it became the actual official name of the bill. So in very President Trump fashion, he has the ability to brand things and just carry on with them. But, I mean, we did a lot of work on this. We actually held a couple of events leading up to it, highlighting some of the important factors of it. And a lot of this, pretty much everything in it, was part of the agenda that we ran on, definitely that the president ran on. So this was that bill to make sure that we have the right funding and also get off on the right tracks here to deliver on what we ran on, from border to taxes to energy to security, I mean, you name it, it really protecting healthcare and Medicaid. I mean, that was a big topic that took over the conversation there for a bit. I led a lot of the efforts on that to make sure that we protected work at the hospitals. So we can break down several aspects of it, but basically it's very common sense, broad support. I've been hearing a lot of good feedback from the community about this, and it just kind of shoots up the ability to do the agenda. Now, just for everybody's kind of like awareness, a reconciliation bill only can happen when you have the majority in the House, the Senate, and the White House, right? That's when the reconciliation bill can happen, because you only need 51 votes in the Senate to pass it, not 60, as a regular filibuster rule. So you can, within reconciliation, you only need 51 in the Senate to get it passed. But there are a lot of rules that govern what can go into reconciliation. You can't just dump any kind of policy in there without a very direct nexus to spending or reducing spending, right? So increasing revenue or reducing spending, it has to be around that area and meet that criteria, or else it gets stricken out over in the Senate. So we had to make it sure that everything that was in the House version of it can pass the test over in the Senate. That's where it wants to go now. But having said that, we're looking at, of course, extending the Jobs Act, tax cuts and Jobs Act, back from Trump's first term. Had we not done something here, it would have been the highest tax increase, literally in American history, that we would have seen on our businesses, on our individuals, on child tax credits. I mean, taxes just would have skyrocketed. That's not what we need right now. So these aren't new tax cuts. They are just an extension of where we were to make sure that businesses can continue to operate the way they were on the small business side, but also individuals. And of course, we have a lot of border, right? I mean, we are funding new agents, funding new technology, finishing the wall, all the things that we ran on that needed to happen and need to happen still, although things are in a much better shape now. It's not over. Fentanyl still is a big issue, although the human trafficking side has very much decreased by 94%, actually. We still are seeing drugs come through, and then also cartels shifting into more of the technology piece, the drones, and getting more bold in their attacks on our side as well. So it includes all of this together.
No, shoring up that southern border is going to be extremely helpful for southern Arizona, not just for CD6, but really the entire state as well, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is something that when you look at the what was funded in there, I'll give you some examples. So, you know, we had about, I'm looking at my notes here. I want to make sure I get it right. 10,000 new Immigration and Customs Enforcement personnel, right? ICE agents. 5,000 new Customs and Border Protection officers, 3,000 Border Patrol agents, and then also pay for these agents, right? 10,000 annual bonuses for frontline agents over the next 4 years. We're having a huge retention issue and also recruiting issue on Border Patrol for the obvious reason in the last 4 years. So all this helps staff up, but also offer the right technology. And combined with the right policies and our ability to enforce the laws, we're gonna be in good shape. But it needed this influx of funding. I mean, one interesting thing regarding on the deportation side of things, I visited an ICE holding facility, and one in Eloy, and it was interesting because I said, how are we doing in the number of deportations versus say the Obama years? Because Obama was actually known as the deporter in chief. You know, the amount of deportations that happened under Obama hasn't been reached by anyone since then. And it was very interesting. They said in terms of volume, under the Obama years, the majority of the people that were being sent back were from Mexico or the Northern Triangle, you know, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala. He said now the volume isn't as high, but the danger level of the illegal immigrant that we're deporting is much higher. So they're either chartering a flight with a handful of people from, you know, countries across the world over on the other side. And so the volume isn't as high, but it's much more expensive because of where the people came from. Before, they were just coming from our neighboring countries. Now they're coming from all over the world. Sudan and other countries that have known to be producing literal terrorists coming into the country. So the cost of being able to send these people back is much higher now because of where they came from and the coordination with these countries that are literally, you know, across the globe. So
without a doubt, we're a lot safer of a community because of both this bill and your efforts to fix up the border over here. We've got to take a quick CBS news break over here. Can you stick around for another segment with you over here? Lots to break down on HR1 with House Representative Juan Ciscomani. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger and Juan Ciscomani on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk.
Don't forget to go to 1030 The Voice on Facebook, 1030 The Voice, and hit that like button so you can keep up to date with what we're doing here, show schedules and events coming up. 1030 The Voice on Facebook. Hit the like button.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Krueger, and we've got the pleasure of another segment with House Representative Juan Ciscomani calling into The Morning Voice. Welcome back, Juan.
Hey, thank you. Sorry, I realized that I was breaking up, and I was in the garage, Grant, hiding away from the kids because they, of course, during school days, they get up late, but during the summer, they decide to get up early. So
I understand. I do a lot of business out of my garage as well, too. This is how we got to get it done.
And those kids are good lobbyists, too, by the way. So strong lobbyists.
Well, I'm in the car now, so hopefully this is better.
Amazing. No, it's great. We're just so thrilled that you could take time out of your busy day to talk to the residents of Tucson, your constituency and CD6, about everything you got going on in Congress right now.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, so as we were talking about, this bill was key to get the priorities passed. It's very common sense and delivers on the things that we ran on and what people elected us for, right? I mean, this state, this district voted both for President Trump, but statewide in the district as well. And for myself, so we ran on these priorities. The president and I and the rest of the House on the Republican side were locked in on how to get this done. We wanted to make sure that we, you know, the take off the economy the way it needs to, and also protect the border. And if we can spend a little time here on the health side of it, on the Medicaid, because that took over a lot of the conversation. And there was a lot of fear mongering going on what this bill would do. And to be honest, there were some proposals on the table that would have been harmful to Arizonans, and specifically in CD6, those that are depending on Medicaid, which are vulnerable populations that Medicaid was created to protect and serve, right? The single moms or those dealing with disabilities maybe hit a heartbreak in life, and they're on the poverty line and they need help, seniors, before they reach the Medicare age. So you've got different groups of people that Medicaid is supposed to protect. And then we expanded the population later after that first the traditional population came in. And so we have a large population that is depending on Medicaid, and the proposals that we were looking at, some folks really wanted to carve back a lot of the expenses there that would have hurt the different populations in there. What I was proposing was common sense things like work requirements, right? If we put in work requirements for people that are, adults with no kids and they're healthy and they're receiving Medicaid that is meant to be for the people in real need, then we need to put some requirements around it, like work requirements that Arizona is very open to as well. So we did those things, but we stayed away from all the things that could have been harmful to impact these populations in a bad way. And I got to tell you, this was one of my top issues going into the deal. I met with the White House on this. The president was also very much on this. I don't know if you heard the report, but he came over to the House, to the Republicans on Tuesday of last week. And I had met with the White House one-on-one on Monday evening. And he came over on Tuesday morning and straight up told the House, like, do not mess around with Medicaid. We, you know, this is not the place and the time. We need to stick to rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicaid. We're all for that. Work requirements, you know, verification maybe twice a year instead of just once a year. Things like that are pretty common sense that has broad support. So that's what we focused on. So let me just tell the audience out there, the traditional population is not suffering or getting any hit on this. And neither is the expansion, in the sense that if you're an able-bodied adult that can go to work and you don't have any dependents, you know, you should putting in a work at least part-time. And that's what the bill says, at least 80 hours a month to either work, volunteer, go to school, whatever it is. You got to be out there with some kind of activity if you're, again, an adult with no kids and you're healthy, I don't think anybody would argue against these people, you know, going out there and finding some work. So I'm happy that we protected Medicaid for the people that need it and even the expansion population as well.
I think so too, Juan. You did a masterful job of threading that needle, quite frankly, of representing your constituency in CD6, which is a somewhat purple district as well too, and protecting some of these valuable services that people of Southern Arizona need, but still giving the tax cuts and, you know, the passing of HR1 here, it, you know, the importance that it needed. You were probably the deciding vote in this one with only one vote in the House.
There's only one vote in the House, and we worked hard to get it to the place where it is. It goes to the Senate now, and we'll continue the work there. But I got to give a lot of kudos to the hospitals here in CD6. My team and I were in touch with pretty much all of them, the health centers as well. I visited multiple hospitals to make sure I understood exactly what they needed in this bill and what we needed to stay away from. So we had three red lines, as we call it in Congress, of me telling the Speaker and the White House what kind of bill I wasn't able to support. And I was very public on this. I wrote letters to the Speaker. I made public statements on saying, listen, if we change the FMAPs, that's going to activate the trigger law in Arizona. That's detrimental. Per capita caps are dangerous for our state. And also the provider tax rate decreasing it would have been very harmful, costing us billions of dollars in Medicaid. And these were the things that I heard from the most from the hospitals and the providers and the stakeholders. And that's what I the red lines that I wrote in my statements. And listen, none of that was in there. We were able to keep all that off the bill. And it was considered, strongly considered at different points. So thank you for saying that, acknowledging our work there. We did work hard to make sure that that wasn't on there, and it didn't have it on there. Again, work requirements and verification, I think, are common sense things. Now it goes to the Senate, but the full package does, right? That was the Medicaid piece that got a lot of the attention, but you're right. It's got the extension and the fact that taxes will not be going up at the end of the year when the tax cuts expire. That was a big one. Border, I mean, energy reform, all these things that are so important for our state and our region. And I also supported some of the energy tax credits that we needed to get industry going here, projects already ongoing. So anyway, it was a really good package. I'm proud that we passed it. And now the Senate does their work. Deadline is July 4th. So it's going to be a busy summer, that's for sure.
Without a doubt. You know, you've got a lot of support from the Restaurant Association, both state and nationally, something that's near and dear to my heart and a lot of our listeners' heart here on The Morning Voices. We're always talking about restaurants. And so you guys helped pass this no tax on tips provision and really put some good guardrails on this one as well, too. I was a little worried that the world might start calling everything a tip out there, right? You'd go to your lawyer and not pay him and tip him, or your landscaper, here's $1 and $500 in tips. And I really think the guardrails and the boundaries that were put on no tax on tips are going to be really helpful for restaurant employees.
Well, I think that's a great example, right? I talked about our relationship with the hospitals here in the district, but also with the restaurants. And the Restaurant Association came over to our office to see us and talk about these kind of things that are important to you guys. And you're right. The no tax on tips sounds great. And then when you start getting into the details, you realize that people can game systems here and there, right? And that's why we put those kind of guardrails around it. And when you see no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, these are ways that people can put more money in their pockets. I worked at Wendy's as my first job when I was still in high school. And I remember the times that I did go overtime, by working summers and those times, we actually got taxed higher. That's when I realized on the overtime than we did on normal hours or same with tips. So we needed to make sure that people that are putting in the work and trying to work more, they can keep more of their hard-earned money. So those are the kind of things that I think just, again, make sense that have been talked about for a long time, but we needed to get it done. And I was glad to see the statement from the Restaurant Association come out in support of the bill. And because, again, it has a lot of good things in there, including these things that we're talking about.
Yeah, so many good things. I mean, the continuation of the 199A qualified business income tax credit. I know it's deep tax nerdery for our listeners out there, but that was a big deal for small business owners to keep small business, which is, you know, the heart of the American economy is small business, and to keep everybody solvent and liquid and to be able to reinvest in our business. And, of course, the full depreciation of large capital expenditures. managers too. When you think of investing in restaurants these days, it could be hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars, and the ability to depreciate large portions of that equipment makes it a lot easier, a lot more palatable for us to make those kind of investments. And so that bill that you guys just passed in the House helps all of us in the small business world continue to reinvest in our businesses and employ more people in Southern Arizona.
That's right. I mean, you know, you're able to invest more, hire more people can put food on the table for their families. A lot of the workforce that you have, some are there temporarily, others have made a career out of it. People should have that choice, whatever they want to do, be able to do that. And at the same time, businesses should be profitable. So we're protecting the taxpayer as well. Costs can go down. It's just a win-win-win across the board. So I'm excited to see the Senate work on this as well. Again, there are things that we're still going to be pressing on working with them, because the bill has to come back to the House ultimately for a final reconciliation of both processes in both the House and Senate, and then go to the president. So we're still going to be involved. We still get another bite at the apple. And I'm hoping that this bill just gets stronger as it goes through the process.
I think it will as well, too. It looks like you've got more support even from the Senate than maybe even on the House side. A couple of House representatives on the Republican side turned on this one as well for their own interests. And that may create some challenges for those candidates moving forward as well, too.
Yeah, I mean, one of them, the president called him out. I mean, he votes no on anything. His name is Tom Massey from Kentucky. So he's got his way, and the president even kind of half joked with him when he was over, but the guy's got his own style, his own way, and he voted against it. Another member on the Republican side, I think he's got to be the chair of the Freedom Caucus. I think he voted present, and then two other Republicans missed the vote. So that's four right there that could have been yeses, that hopefully, you know, that they can get around it. And we're going to need every vote. I mean, when you look at this really tight margin, This has got to be done with a lot of precision. So I give the president a lot of credit here, President Trump. I mean, he was very much invested in this. His whole team was very responsive to our questions and our inquiries and our feedback as well. Speaker Johnson obviously was masterful in just navigating all this. So it was a team win, but really all of us with our constituents in mind. And I'm just happy with the product. And again, I'm excited to see this signed into law.
Yeah, I think it's a win for the country. It's a win for Arizona. And it's a win for the representatives of CD6. We've got to take a quick break over. You got time for one more 5-minute segment with me?
Yeah, of course.
All right, perfect. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to House Representative Juan Ciscomani and Grant Krueger on 1030 AM The Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. You're joined by host Grant Krueger, and we've got House Representative Juan Ciscomani in the house for one more segment. Welcome back, Juan.
Thanks, man. Thanks, Grant.
Hey, really excited to have you on the show today. It's really awesome that you took time out of your very, very busy schedule of say, running the country and a family with six kids over here to break down what you guys have been doing in Congress.
Yeah, happy to be on with you and take a little break here hiding in the car. All good.
Understood. You can come hide in the car and come on the show anytime you want, live from your car over here. We'll set up a microphone. We'll make it all happen for you, sir.
Right on, man. I'll take you up on that.
For the listeners that don't know, Juan is the real deal. He's been contributing in Southern Arizona for an awful long time. We had the opportunity to meet on the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce back about 15 years ago or so. And he was our voice in the restaurant industry as a representative of Governor Ducey during the COVID crisis, someone we could call a shoulder to cry on. I think I probably cried more than once on your shoulder over there for what we were going through. And now he's our two-time sort of defending House representative out of CD6. Do you have any other plans to run for higher office, you think, Juan?
Well, right now we're focusing on this. We've got such an exciting time. I got to tell you, the difference between term one and term two has been night and day. The first term, not having the Senate, not having the White House, really hampered a lot of what we wanted to do. You know, we got things out of the House, but kind of like knowing that it was not going to get picked up by the Senate. So it was frustrating. Our own community was frustrated with the lack of progress, played a lot of defense more than offense. And that's of course one stage that you're in when you have a divided government. Now that we have the White House and the Senate along with the House, now we're able to pass legislation that we know has a real shot at making it all the way through. That includes our veteran stuff. Now, I got to tell you, even in my first term, we didn't let that stop us. So I look for things that would be able to get through, even with a Democrat-controlled Senate and White House, and that was along veterans, benefits for veterans and health care or disability claims, all these things work, training for them while they're still in service before they leave active duty military. So all these things that we worked on our for our veterans was able to make it through. But now the menu of options has expanded, and all that we can do, we just talked a lot about this bill that we did, but there's more coming on the appropriation side of things that that, you know, we're about to hit the summer into forming the bills and doing all that. So it almost feels like a whole new experience here, being able to be in the House this cycle, this term. And so I'm looking forward to what's coming as well, winning in 26 and serving another term.
Absolutely. A home team advantage is a little more fun to play when you've got that home field over there, huh?
Yeah, it sure is. It absolutely makes a huge difference, no question.
Speaking of home field, did you see that Tucson's going to get a professional baseball team over here? The Mayos of Navajoa are going to move up and play at our park on Ajo. Did you know that?
Well, I know the Mayos. I didn't know that they were moving up.
Breaking news.
When was that announced?
Just late last week. They haven't even picked a name yet for the team. I'm obviously lobbying to bring the Tucson Toros back, as I think Tuffy the Toro needs to make a reappearance over here. But at the moment, they're going to just call it the Tucson baseball team, in sort of that weird way that the Utah hockey club or the Washington football team does, and do some sort of contest for the team name. But we're getting a pro team here in Tucson.
Man, that's awesome. That's great. Can't wait to go. I mean, the kids love baseball. We just wrapped up the baseball season here in the spring. I got to tell you, when four of the six are playing baseball, it's already a demanding sport. And then you've got all four playing. Boy, do we get our fair share of baseball this in the spring. But we're excited about that. And speaking of sports, let me just give a quick plug here. The flag football team that I coach in Oro Valley, so we won the championship for our little league, and we qualified for the Nationals tournament. So
no way!
We went undefeated, and we won the championship, and now we're going to be in Florida in July. I'm taking our little team over for a 2018 national tournament in Florida. So I'll keep you posted on how we do there.
Yeah, that's so cool. They can call in. When you guys win the natty over here, you come in, and we'll pop bottles of fermented apple cider over here in the KVOI offices and celebrate.
I love it, man. We're going to do that.
Yeah, I understand. Are you still playing on the congressional baseball team as well, too?
Yeah, we are. The game's on the 11th. It's Democrats versus Republicans. And, for some reason, about 30,000 people go to this game. It's at the National Stadium and over the Nats over there. And all charity, all proceeds go to charity. And it's a great time to just have a friendly, competitive game. And when I say friendly, I mean intense. Competitive game, you know, at every front, we're both sides are trying to win. Last year, Republicans won 31-9. So there is no such thing as a mercy rule or anything like that.
No mercy in politics either, right? This makes total sense.
And we run up the score. So it should be another fun one.
That's awesome. What position do you play on the baseball team?
I play two. So I play shortstop, and then but mainly also on top of that, I'm a runner for the other members that can run, which is most of them. So there's about three or four of us that are still in our 30s or 40s that can run. And we that's kind of like what we do for the rest of the team. The majority of the members are, you know, they like to hit. And then the running is a little more challenging. So my legs still work good enough to make some runs. So it's that and shortstop.
You've got to be one of the younger members of the House, no?
I am, yeah, 42. That makes me one of the younger ones. And there are some younger ones, but they don't all play. All right, so they, you know, not everybody likes to be out there. We practice early in the morning, like at 5:30 before the day gets started, and you know, especially when it's cold, and people don't like to be out there. And the coach is like serious. He played professionally, coached for TCU, so he really does play those that practice, and he's like, we practice to win, boys, and you know, so it's. Pretty intense. So
awesome.
Not a lot of people want to do that.
Well, it sounds like we've got a lot of great baseball in our future. The U of A is playing in the College World Series Friday at 1. Bear down, right?
Yeah.
We're excited for that one over here. We're going to get a pro team in Tucson when the Mayos from Navajoa work their way up over here. And we've got a congressional baseball game to look forward to coming up on the 11th as well, too. You're going to have to check those Democrats' results for performance-enhancing drugs over here, corked bats.
That's funny, man. Yeah, we do. We don't do a lot of testing on that. We're just happy that people don't pull hamstrings or, you know, that serious injuries have happened, and not because it's high collisions or anything. Just last year, one guy went for a pop, you know, a pop fly, and as he moved too fast forward, completely shattered his ankle. So,
oh my! Well, we're gonna root for a,
I know, but
we're gonna root for a fair and competitive game out there for you. We thank you, Congressman Juan Ciscomani, for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us on the Morning Voice.
You got it, Grant. Talk to you soon, brother.
Thank you so much, listeners, and have a great week. Looking forward to seeing you next week on The Morning Voice. This has been Grant Kruger on 1030 AM, your home for local news and talk.